Teacher Talk Tuesday is made possible by Schoolhouse 21. Schoolhouse 21 is Mississippi's premier teacher development and placement agency. They meet you where you are and take you where you want to be. Be sure to check us out every Tuesday this summer, starting June 26, 2018, to learn from educators putting their best foot forward in the classroom and inspiring not only children, but future educators. Schoolhouse 21 can be found on Twitter using handle at Schoolhouse, the number 2 and the number 1, and also on Facebook and Instagram as Schoolhouse 21. Lastly, keep up with our conversation using hashtag Teacher Talk Tuesday, and also follow us along as we see where teachers go using hashtag Teachers Be Everywhere. Today, we have special guests, Katie Craig. Katie received her Bachelor's of Science in Elementary Education with concentrations on Middle School Language Arts and Social Studies from Mississippi State University. Katie is entering her third year of teaching at Pelahatchie Elementary School, where she serves on the leadership team as grade chair, new teacher mentor, and junior beta club sponsor. Additionally, she is a member of the Mississippi Association of Educators, National Association of Educators, and National Council for the Social Studies. She was recently honored as Rankin County School District's Outstanding New Teacher of the Year. Hello, everyone. This is Teacher Talk Tuesday. Today, we have Kathy Craig. She comes to us from Pelahatchie Elementary School. Pelahatchie Elementary School services nearly 474 children from pre-K to sixth grade. And the student teacher ratio is 17-1. And Pelahatchie is located in Rankin County, Mississippi. So welcome, Kathy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So today we're going to be discussing classroom management and your take on it. How long have you been a teacher?
I've taught for 2 full years. I'm about to start my third year completely on my own as a teacher.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
And what do you teach?
I teach, I'm coming out of a sixth grade classroom. I've taught sixth grade language arts and social studies for 2 years, and I'm headed down to fourth grade this year.
Okay, so. Awesome. Is that a testing grade?
It is. In Mississippi, we test third grade through eighth grade in math, reading, and writing. And so I do reading and writing.
Awesome. Okay. So let's dive into your classroom management techniques and styles. Why should teachers focus on classroom management?
Student achievement, bottom line. Classroom management impacts student achievement more than I think a lot of teachers give it credit for.
Right.
And I think a lot of times we have a tendency to focus on the curriculum and the standards and the testing and teaching the lessons and assessing, which is, you know, the forefront of education, and it should be, but none of those things can work effectively as they should without a good, rigid classroom management system in place. So student achievement, 100%.
Student achievement, awesome. What's the difference between classroom management and discipline, which I think people who are not in education might merge those two together?
And that's what I see it all the time. I think teachers, a lot of times, they think classroom management is summed up with discipline. I've got my rules. I've got my consequences. I shouldn't have any problem. And then they get in the classroom with their rules and their consequences, and they can't figure out why it's not working and why they're constantly having to redirect students and why they're constantly having issues they didn't think about. And so I think it's important that we separate the two. Discipline is definitely a facet of classroom management, but classroom management goes beyond just the discipline. It's your procedures and your routines and your schedule and your relationships with student, any aspect of the classroom that helps you efficiently teach and make sure students are actively learning. That is classroom management. It doesn't just stop at discipline.
I got you. Can you give us your definition of what classroom management is?
To me, classroom management, kind of going back to what we said, just any practice, any procedure in place to protect learning and teaching and to make sure the classroom is running efficiently, smoothly, anything in place that keeps the focus on instruction. Classroom management, yeah.
When a new teacher comes in and they have their classroom procedures and their consequences and they don't see that that's working, what should be their next step?
if your classroom management isn't working, you need to stop and you need to figure out where am I misstepping. You know, I think it's important that first you got to figure out what can I do to protect learning? What can I do to protect teaching? What behaviors are interfering with my students' ability to learn in my classroom? And go from there, build your rules. From there, a set of rules that's going to protect that. Anything that will eliminate the misbehavior or the distractions that are getting in the way of student success, and start from there. And I would encourage them, you know, if you've had rules and procedures in place and you've tried to implement them and it's not going successfully, maybe take a step back and start one procedure at a time and really go in and model it and really define that for your students. What does that look like? What do I expect? Once that one procedure is going well, okay, maybe I can add another one. You know, if it's not going well right off the bat, maybe you started with too many at one time and maybe you didn't effectively model it for your kids and they just were overloaded from the beginning. Because what you'll find is kids, when showed how, they want to do well. Gotcha. And they want to please. And so just step back and figure out why is it not working first, and then how can I make it work better?
Okay. It's day one, the first day of school. How do you present your procedures and how do you model that to your students?
Well, we're going to present it as transparently as possible, and we're going to going to model it very specifically, you know. And I think teachers think teaching procedures and routines has to be this big separate entity, but it's just teaching like you would teach any other content. You're going to give definitions and you're going to give examples and very specifically model these behaviors for your students. And you're transparent in the fact that I'm going to cover everything. There's not one routine, there's not one procedure I'm going to leave off of the table, because you're going to know up front what I expect. And so I would model it, over exaggerate it for sure. You know, you don't want to just show your kids, this is how I stand in line, this is how I face forward. You want to show them, this is how I'm not going to stand in line. And so if you're stomping and huffing and puffing and you want to show this isn't proper behavior, you're going to over-exaggerate it to a ridiculous degree. You know, you want the kids, to the point that the kids think it's funny and it's memorable for the kids. I mean, what I found is a lot of times the behaviors you make fun of, they're not going to engage in later because they're going to remember how ridiculous you looked doing it. But yeah, you're just going to overly model it, be overly specific with what you expect, so there's no question later of what was expected. And I think it's important that teachers and students go on the record from the beginning of, this is what is expected in this classroom.
I got you.
This is what will not be tolerated in the classroom, and it's going to save a lot of drama later on down the road because you've been over that with your kids. And I think it's important too that we don't just model the behaviors that we expect, we model the consequences and we model the pathways that you can take should you face a consequence. A lot of times I'll see teachers, or even, you know, my first year, one of the things that I feel like I did not do well, I didn't go in from day one and say, this is what's going to happen. I did not show them the pathways that they could take. You know, it's not enough in my experience to say, we're going to behave this way, and if we don't, here's what's going to happen. You have to show them, here's the consequence. And not just, here's the consequence. You need to show them, here's what's going to happen if I give you a warning, and you heed the warning, and your behavior corrects. You need to show them from day one, you can be redeemed in this class. Redemption is possible. But you also need to go ahead and show them what's going to happen at the extreme end that they don't get it together and can't figure it out. It needs to be very transparent from day one, that I'm going to protect your learning no matter what. You're here to learn. This is a place I want you to be. And anybody who gets in the way of that, even if it's yourself, is going to be stopped. And I'm going to hold you accountable because I care about you enough to do that. And they need to see, and they need to have been modeled from the very beginning everything that might possibly happen as a result of not engaging in that management plan.
I got you. And you said it was two full years of teaching. It sounds like you've really took in a lot from those 2 years.
The first 2 years of teaching, I will tell you that it was a huge learning curve. You know, I remember graduating and I had taken my management classes and I had, you know, read every book that anybody handed me, just trying to be prepared. And then you get there and you realize you're not prepared and you don't know anything you thought. You know, it's so different being in a classroom on your own, shutting that door with nobody around to help you. You got to kind of figure out what works and what doesn't. But in my experience, you know, 2 years in, my first year was We got off to a pretty rough start because I didn't know all these management things. And so literally everything that I believe about classroom management at this point, I have experienced and learned from myself. And so through talking to wiser teachers who have been around a lot longer than I have, and going back to some of my professors in college and just diving into literature and testing out things that worked well and seeing things that didn't work. What I have learned is modeling is key, you know. Right. And again, going back to what we said earlier, kids want to do well and they want to please if they know what that looks like. Right. And so my biggest recommendation would definitely be just model as much as you need to, as clearly as you need to, and revisit it throughout the year if you need to go back and remind your kids what it looks like.
So. And I guess along those lines, when I was an assistant in the classroom, I didn't realize how important that was to like model what you expected your kids to do, because I think when, or at least my experience was, I go in the classroom like, hey, do this worksheet. And they're just like, but how? And you don't, I didn't realize like, well, they want to know what color, and then if it's this color, it has to be this exact color, or it's not exactly what you said.
Right, and as adults, it's so easy to forget. Like, kids at this age don't know how to think for themselves, you know? And so, like, you're teaching routines and procedures, but you're also teaching how to think, how to make decisions, and so modeling is key to that. We want to model how we think. We want to model how we make decisions, everything, and we go into a classroom, and we just forget what it's like to be a fourth grader or a sixth grader who doesn't know, you know, what to do. And so, yeah, at the heart of it, kids want to please. We've just got to help them. So our goal as teachers, we want kids to be as successful as possible. And so I've got, it's my job to show them, how can I be successful in this classroom? And that all starts with managing rules and procedures.
Awesome. So. How exactly would you model your rules and expectations for your students? And how does that, and I think we covered that, but how does that look like the first day? What rules are we setting for them day one of school?
Okay, well, I think, and I'm glad you mentioned that, one thing I think is important, and I want to say before I forget, I don't think we dedicate the whole first day of school to routines and procedures. Gotcha. I think that's one thing. I was taught to do it that way. I've tried it that way. I've seen it done that way. But at the end of the first day, my goal for students, I don't want them to walk away saying, yes, I know all of Miss Craig's rules and procedures. You know, I want them to walk away saying, this is going to be a great year. And so I think it's important that we give them, definitely cover the rules and procedures. Start with the rules and procedures first minute of the day, but don't spend, I think one mistake teachers make all the time is spending so much time on rules and procedures that their kids start to just kind of feel like robots locked into this box, you right. know. And so definitely while we're on the topic of first day of school, give kids the opportunity to experience what your class is going to be like. Have them go home excited to come back the next day, because that's where you're going to get leverage, and leverage is one of the most important things you can have to effectively manage a classroom. But you do need to go over rules and procedures the first day. And so if I had to pick the ones that I think are most important, there's two of them that I think are more important than any of the other rules and procedures that you're going to need. Mm-hmm. And that's number one, students need to come in ready to work the minute they walk into the door. And so there gotcha. Needs to be a procedure in place that the minute I sit down in class, I know that Miss Craig has something for me to do. I need to get started on it. And there's got to be some accountability there. I know she's going to check it. And so you got to have, you got to teach them to come in and look for that work, whether it's on the board, whether it's on their desk, whether it's in a bin that they go get it. The first thing you can do the first day of school is have them come in and set a purpose for being there. It's really important. And one thing I see all the time is it's amazing the difference in student engagement in a classroom where they know I've got 3 seconds to sit down and get started and we're not wasting time because my learning is important, versus a class where they know I'm going to have 5 or 10 minutes at the beginning of class because my teacher's going to be at her desk getting things ready. It just immediately, it sets the tone for the day. I expect excellence from the minute you walk into the class. And so that is how I would start the first day of school. They're going to have a task when they get into my room, and once we sit down, we're going to talk about the importance of coming in every single day and starting it, and we'll model what that looks like to go through, come in, get your things out, get started, and we'll go through examples of that and non-examples. And then the other really important procedure I think to cover on the first day of school, you got to have some way to get your class back in. You know, right. A lot of times in class, especially at that 4th through 6th grade level, kids are going to be working in groups, or you're not going to be hovering over them every second of the day. You're going to just kind of be facilitating these experiences. And so it's going to get chaotic and it's going to be loud. And so from day one, your kids need to know some sort of signal that it's time to stop whatever I'm doing, wherever I am, be quiet and listen to what my teacher has to say. You know, you can easily lose control of the classroom if you cannot signal your students' attention. And so day one, I'm going to teach that you have work to do in here. You have expectations to meet the minute you walk through the door.
Right.
And I'm going to teach, I need your attention when I do these three things. And it, you know, it may be turning the light off to get their attention if it's dark. It may be making a call and response. It may just make a noise or calling out to the class. Whatever works for you. I don't think there's, you know, one set way. But something needs to be done so kids know it's time to stop wherever I am because something important is about to be said. So those are the two I'm going to emphasize in the first day of school. And I mean, and you'll emphasize respecting classmates and respecting your teacher and all of that through, you know, team building activities and things that you get in through as the day progresses and all throughout the year. But definitely two things to cover the first day of school. We're here with a purpose, and I need to know when my teacher needs my attention.
Do you want to share one of your call and responses that you've found successful?
In my you know, when I was in college and I was interning, I was in a second grade class, and I know they did a lot of the chants and the call and responses, and the whole brain teaching is what they found to work really well. And so they might just say class, and then the kids would respond yes, and they immediately all know, like, when I hear class, I'm to respond this way, and everybody listens. Now the sixth grade level, if I called out to my class that way, they'd be like, she does not know what she's doing, you know. And so for me, it was as simple as saying, all right, voices off. And they knew, oh, she said voices off. Or sometimes, you know, I taught my kids, anytime the lights go off, you are to stop wherever you are. You're to be quiet because that's serious. I'm not going to just turn the lights off because you're being too noisy. But, like, you know, state testing comes around, you got to be real quiet. Well, we do group work in my class all the time. It's always getting loud. Well, if we're getting too loud and I can see they're about to come down and give us a warning because state testing, I can go quickly to that light. And I know no matter what is going on, no matter how important whatever my students are working on is, wherever they are in the process, when they see that light go off, they're stopping, they're being still, and they're waiting to see what's going on. And if you don't overuse it, they respect it. And they think it's sacred, you know, like, turn off, like, I've got to be quiet. I know that some of the teachers that I work with, and I haven't tried this, but I hope to, they have wireless doorbells in their classroom.
Okay.
It's the neatest thing. I would have never thought of it, but they just ordered it from Amazon. It's like a $20 little doorbell, and it plugs into their wall, into an outlet, and then it comes with the remote. So they just keep it in their pocket, and you can program it. It's got different rings, and so they've programmed different sounds to mean different things for their kids. And as soon as that doorbell goes off, their kids know it's time to be quiet. It's time to stop what I'm doing. Or maybe it's time to transition. And so they use it religiously in their classroom. And it's been very effective for them. I haven't tried it, but it sounds like something worth trying.
Oh, so, that sounds pretty cool, actually. So how do you help students develop responsibility to stay on task when you're not standing over them?
This is something I hear teachers complain about all the time. You know, they'll be working with the center, and, well, I just don't understand why my kids won't do this work. And, you know, one thing I say to them is, are you holding your kids accountable for the work that's being done? Number one, not to say you have to check over every single thing you ever ask a student to do because you'll drive yourself crazy. But kids know if their teachers are walking around and formatively assessing their work. Mm-hmm. Is she in close proximity to me? Can she see what I'm doing? Do I respect my teacher? Do I have a relationship with my teacher where I want to do what she asked me to do? All of those things are kind of fundamental aspects in giving responsibility over to students. One thing I see all the time is that teachers will give their students an assignment, and they'll pull a small group with the best intentions, you know, not trying to neglect the rest of the class. But when it's time for that group to move on, they're like, all right, next group, come on over. And they never even break what they're doing to check on the rest of their students. And then at the end of class, they're like, why didn't y'all get this work done? Well, those kids knew you were going to be at your desk at that small group for 45 minutes. They didn't have to get it done. They knew you weren't going to check it. They knew it was just going to go in their folder. And it kind of becomes like this shut up seat work, you know. So, and kids know that. Kids understand when they're being given busy work. Kids understand when their work has a value. And so I would encourage teachers to make sure you're always providing meaningful work for students. Make sure kids see the meaning in that work. You can go over it with them. Here's what we're doing today. Here's why we're doing it today. And here's how it's going to help you in the future in this class. Here's why you need it. And, you know, take a break and check on your, if you have kids working independently, or if you have kids in group, that doesn't mean you have to stand over their shoulder the whole class, but you need to be in close proximity with those students. You need to be walking around knowing, you know, they need to understand you're going to be over and you're going to expect to see something done, and you're going to expect them to be able to answer for it too. It's not just, okay, looks like he filled it in, and not, they need to know you're going to really evaluate what are they doing, because right. kids are tricky, you know, they'll try to trick you however they can. And so if you just have a sheet and you're just looking to see that they wrote something on it, well, they're going to learn that about you very right. quickly. And so that work's not going to get done. If they know you're going to come over and you're going to engage in a conversation with them about it, if you're going to be checking it, or if that's going to be dependent to whatever's coming next, they're going to see value in it, and they are going to get it done. Because again, kids want to please when they know how. And so it just comes back to, are you holding them accountable? And are you doing everything in your power to let them know they're being held accountable? Right. And it's,
I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think that adults tend to underestimate this level that children have?
Absolutely, 100%. I have preached this time and time again. I think as a whole, teachers in general, we just kind of underestimate our students. We feel like as their teachers, we have to just give them all the answers, and we're this great imparter of knowledge, and they don't know anything if we haven't taught it to them. And we, by underestimating them, we are constantly kind of belittling what they are capable of doing in class. And kids know that. Kids are going to rise to whatever expectation you have of them, you know, and our expectations of students is kind of our outward manifestation of our belief in that student's ability to succeed. And kids know that. So if I'm constantly thinking, oh, well, they don't know how to be responsible, they don't know how to do the work, well, kids are going to see that that's my belief in them. And then I'm going to kind of teach them helplessness. That's one thing I see all the time. Kid, especially the sixth grade teacher, kids get to my classroom having been through third, fourth, and fifth grade, and they've been taught to be helpless because their teachers, not all of them, but along the way, they've realized this pattern of, well, if I act like I don't know how to do it, or if I act confused, or if I don't get the work done, I'm going to have less work to do, or she's going to think I'm confused. And so I think one of the most important things you can do as a teacher, you need to have really high expectations of your students, and you need to let them know, these are my expectations of you, and here's what I'm doing to help you meet those expectations. By the end of this year, you're going to have met them, but I'm holding you accountable every single day for coming in and doing your part to meet those expectations. But if you believe a child can do it, a child can do it every single time. Maybe not immediately, but that child is going to work as hard as he possibly can to meet that expectation.
Yeah, that is true. I've seen that, especially working in that kindergarten level. They just want to do good so bad, and they just need to know how to do it. And I heard this phrase where they're like, you know, they're learning how to people. And so when I heard that, I was like, wow, I never thought of it that way. Like, they are people, but they're just smaller people. And so they just need to be taught how to be a person, essentially. So
yeah, absolutely. And same with classroom management. You know, a lot of times we don't teach our kids how to behave. We just come to school expecting that a sixth grader knows how to act. We right. just come to school expecting even that a kindergartner knows how to act, because they're people, and we don't actually teach them what's right and what's wrong. And you know, especially for kids who come from homes where like their culture at home may not be the same culture at school as far as expectations and success, well, you have to teach them here at school, this is how we are going to act. And I've heard it said before, you know, you teach a kid to swim, you don't just throw a kid in the pool and say, why aren't you swimming? Why right. don't you know how to swim? You know, you don't just put a kid on a baseball field and say, well, why don't you know how to hit that ball? So why do we as teachers put kids in a classroom and be like, why don't you know how to act right if right. you haven't actively taught them that? So yeah, I'd never heard it that way, but I like that. They are, even in sixth grade, they're learning how to people.
Right.
For sure.
Awesome. How do you motivate and engage your students all the time? Full day of school is a lot. So how do you keep them motivated to want to do well?
That is, I think, the one thing every teacher across America is looking for. How do I keep every student engaged in everything that I do every single day? And the reality is, every child is not going to be excited about everything you do in your class. Right. You know, there are going to be times where maybe the work is boring but necessary. And so I think to keep kids engaged, it really comes down to two things. Have you built a relationship with the child to the point that they believe what you say? You know, if I'm telling you, this work is going to help you, this work is valuable, it's needed to be done, but you don't believe anything I say because I haven't taken the time to invest in you all year, okay, well, you have no reason to do it. I have not deposited anything into you. So why am I sitting here trying to make a withdrawal? You know, so I think relationships with students, establishing credibility with students is a huge part in student engagement. Whether they're excited about it or not, if they want to be in your classroom and they believe what you say, when you tell them this is right that needs to be done and it's going to help you, they're going to believe it and right. they're going to see the value in it. And so I think relationships is huge. But also, again, it goes back to defining that purpose. If I just give you a sheet and send you on your way and say, get this done by the end of class, and I'm not even paying attention to you, you're not going to be engaged in that right. whatsoever. But if I have defined the purpose for you, I've explained to you, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, and here's how it's personally going to help you, well, you're going to take responsibility for it because you want to be successful. And so you've just got to establish, here's why we're doing it. Don't give busy work. That's what that would be my right. honest recommendation. If you want kids to be engaged, don't give them busy work. Give them something that they are going to see the value in, and then help them transfer that into something valuable for them personally.
Okay. How do you manage a student who isn't motivated by getting in trouble, parent contact, being sent to the office, or not having access to what they find fun outside of that classroom?
That is one that I have struggled with. I think every teacher at some point struggles with that. My first year of teaching, I really, really struggled with this one student in particular who was just constantly, he just was not going to do the work. You could try everything that you wanted. You could, you know, threaten. You could give a consequence. You could try to reward. Anything anybody suggested to do just did not work. He was over his education. And what I have found, it kind of started with this student, and I started researching it. And then in my second year, what I really learned, again, relationship is key. Every student is motivated by something. Mm-hmm. But if a student doesn't like you, if a student doesn't see the purpose in your class, even the thing that they love the most is not going to motivate them to get up and want to partake in your right. class. That's one thing that I've learned. And so I think it goes back to that leverage. Have you created an environment where kids want to be every single day? Have you done the work to show them that you're protecting that environment for them? Do they go home excited about your work? Have you taken the time to get to know them? Do you check in on them personally? Do you know things about them? Have you made an effort to get to know that individual as a person? Do you have leverage with that student? That's going to be the key number one, leverage. Once you have a student on your side, once a student has fallen in love with you, a student will do anything you ask them to do, even if they wouldn't normally do it themselves. And so I think relationship is key number one. But what I, probably the most impactful lesson that I've learned as a teacher is not to try to force anything over a student's right. head, okay? And so my first year of teaching, I went in, as a first year teacher, I had to be the teacher, and I right. knew what it was, and a child wasn't going to undermine me. And if you started, if you talked back to me in class, you didn't do my work, I had to show the class that I knew how to handle it, you right. know? And so I found myself constantly engaged in a power struggle with this one student. And he wasn't going to do it. No matter what I said, no matter how into it we got, he was not going to do it. Nothing affected him. And what I learned through that over the course of a whole year, don't engage in a power struggle with the student. The best thing you can do for students who are unmotivated by anything is do not try to force motivation upon them. When you leave them alone and you kind of just make it their choice to work, a lot of times they're going to take it upon themselves to get the work done. They're going to see that everybody else in this class is having fun and they're missing out on that, and they're going to want to come in. And I don't mean, not to ever address it, but what I found a lot of times is when my student was insubordinate, when my student was refusing to work, something in the class had made him mad, whether that be me getting on to him or another student. When a student's refusing to work, oftentimes their feelings are hurt, or they've taken something personally, or right. they're mad. Well, kids do not know how to be reasonable when they're mad. They just don't. Perception is reality. If they're mad at you, if they're mad at a classmate, they see everybody's out to get me. She just wants me to get this work done. She doesn't like me. And so what I have learned is 9 times out of 10, when a student's refusing to work, there's an underlying issue. And so instead of trying to force what I want on that child, you step back and you give the child space and just kind of let him get over it for a minute. Well, that if you choose not to do that right now, that's your choice, but you're going to do it before you get out to recess, and that's fine, and you just kind of deliver this consequence without anger. You don't sound mad. You just kind of sound very neutral, like a referee. If you don't want to work right now, I'm not going to be mad at you, but I expect you to get this work done before the day's over, and you just walk away from it. If that means he lays on the floor with his face down in the carpet for the whole class, fine, but the class sees that You're not getting worked up by that. You're not going to engage in a power struggle. And the class sees, okay, at some point he's going to have to do that work.
Right.
And so when the student calms down, usually, like I said, he's going to calm down before I've ever even had to go over to him in recesses come anyway. And he's going to start working because he's gotten over it. He doesn't feel offended. I haven't hurt my relationship with that child. He's going to start working. And then when he's over it and when he's back to his normal self or when he's working, I can pull him to the side then when I see that he's more engaged in class and say, now, what was that about? You know, let's talk about this. And so the biggest advice I have for, and is that going to work every time? Not necessarily. But like I said, 9 times out of 10, when I have a student who shuts down and refuses to work, something has happened that I have missed somewhere in the day that has hurt their feelings, whether I did it accidentally or whether somebody else did it. And if you give them the space to be mad and cool off, they are always going to come back and they're always going to deliver. And when you make it feel like their choice, it's okay if you don't have to do that right now, but you can't go to recess until you've got it done. Well, they feel like in their mind, well, I've got until recess to get this done. And you know what? Every time they're going to get it done before recess because they don't want their consequence. And so it's just kind of giving up some of the power, I guess, to say, you know, kids don't learn from people they don't like. I've heard that 1,000 times and it's true. And so if you move in on a kid when they're mad, or anybody, even an adult, when they're mad and you're trying to force your way on them, it's going to hurt your relationship. They're not going to do it just to prove that they don't have to do it.
Right.
And so I think the best thing teachers can do is just, you don't have to always have 100% of the power. Just give some of it up, step away from the situation, and usually they will come back down and they'll get the work done, and it'll be a lot more meaningful to them in that you aren't sitting there literally dragging the work out of them. They did it on their own. And a lot of times they'll come back later and want to please you and say, is this what you expected? Did I do this right? Or they'll ask questions about the work as opposed to being, you know, upset and pouting with you while you're forcing them to do the work during recess. They get it done on their own and they don't feel like you have forced it on them.
I got you. That was a great answer. Actually, I was just thinking about how have I seen that in the classroom and then kind of putting it together versus like the do's and the don'ts. That power struggle comment that you made, so powerful actually, because I think one, education can be kind of antiquated in that it's like, I'm the teacher, you have to listen to me, and I'm always right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see that all the time, and I did it all the time my first year of teaching. And I, you know, and sometimes you still slip up, you know, a student will just frustrate you. It's hard not to get frustrated when you know you're trying to do everything in your power to help the child succeed and you really want their best interest at heart. And when they're not seeing that or when they're defying that, it's frustrating. And so I've really had to learn that I am the teacher, but that does not mean I have to get the last word. And that does not mean I have to assert this dominance over kids. And, you know, when you enter into a power struggle with a kid, when you enter into an argument, you lose automatically. You know, you can shut a kid down and embarrass them in front of their classmates to prove that you're the adult and you get the final say. But you're going to be flustered and disgruntled after it's over because he's got you to the point he wants you to be. It's going to hurt your relationship with that student. It's going to hurt your relationship probably with students who watched you treat another kid that way. And one thing I tell my colleagues all the time who struggle with students is don't argue with them. And they're like, it's so hard. And it is. It really is. But I'm telling you, the minute you start to argue with the kid, you've lost right there. Automatically. Right. And so the number one thing I guess I would recommend to any teacher anywhere is whatever you do at the end of the day, do not cause friction with students. That's not to say you can't have high expectations. That's not to say you can't implement a consequence. You can implement a consequence with empathy. Well, I'm so sorry that you don't feel like working right now. I'll see you during recess, you know, and just kind of just calmly like it. Don't take it personally, you know, and when kids misbehave in class, they don't do the work. It's not you, it's them, it's their problem. I'm not going to take it personally, and I'm not going to let them see that I'm getting flustered by it. I'm just going to be that neutral referee. Well, you're here to learn. I'm so sorry you don't feel like doing it right now. You can do it during recess, and it's nothing to, if you do it during recess, if you do it during my class, it makes me no difference whatsoever. It's kept me from getting mad. You're going to get the work done at some point because you want your recess. And so, yeah, just give up the need to be right all the time. It's the best thing you can do as a teacher. It made my relationships with students 100 times better. I mean, my classroom management as a whole, once I learned I don't have to have the last word, I don't have to prove every student wrong who has to be disrespectful, when you start to let some of those things go that aren't as important, everything improves.
Awesome. Can you give us an overview of an effective classroom management plan?
My recommendation on classroom management is to keep it as simple as possible. A lot of times we see teachers, and I'm guilty of it too, trying to do this big, elaborate plan, they want to make it fun and they want to make it cute and they want to have all these components and they think they've thought of everything, the more intricate your classroom management plan becomes, the harder it is to practice with fidelity, you know? Mm-hmm. And consistency is key to classroom management. If you cannot consistently hold your kids accountable for the things you've told them you're going to hold them accountable for, if you can't consistently follow the plan that you have so intricately modeled and taught your students, well, you're going to diminish your credibility with kids because they're going to say, well, she doesn't do what she says.
Right.
And so an effective classroom management plan to me is just a simple one. Two or three rules, maybe, that are general and cover everything that you could ever think of. So maybe raise your hand before speaking, getting out of your seat. Be respectful of your classmates and of your teacher. And through really those two rules, you can have discussions at the beginning of the year. Your students can help you define, well, why do we do those things and what does respect look like? Respect looks like everything in my classroom, you know? And so students can start to have these conversations of, well, is it respectful to talk while my teacher's trying to teach me of something? Well, there's a rule that I've eliminated right there because it falls under respect.
Gotcha.
Well, is it respectful not to do my homework if my teacher's worked really, really hard to prepare the lesson the next day based off of that homework? Well, there's a rule right there. I expect you to do your homework. Well, it all falls under this general rule that we have created. And so I would recommend having a couple of general rules in place. And I would recommend letting students be a part of creating those rules and defining those rules, you know? And some teachers let their kids come in and create the rules from scratch. I would recommend having one or two or three non-negotiables in place that are really important to you that, again, you've thought about and that is going to protect that culture of learning in your classroom. And then letting students help you define that. What does respect look like in this classroom? What does it look like in this classroom? Why are these important to me? And then letting them be a part of the consequences. That to me is a huge part of classroom management. When students are involved in creating the consequences, number one, they're going to buy into them if they've created them.
Right.
Because you better believe Jimmy's going to hold Sarah responsible for getting out of her seat if he's the one who created the rule. You know, they become like little disciplinarians towards each other. But two, you find that kids are a lot tougher on themselves than you normally would be. Mm-hmm. Anytime I've ever let kids come up with consequences, they come up with these really, they're really hard on themselves mm-hmm. because they want to please. And so you kind of get this rigid plan in place that they've come up with. So they completely believe it because they think that's what needs to happen to protect their personal right. learning. They're balled in. It's tough. It's done for you. And it opens up a really good discussion of when the consequence is delivered to them. Oh, well, you said yourself, if you were going to break this rule, this is one of the things that would happen. And so it kind of eliminates some of that. That's not fair.
Right.
That kids like to give sometimes. And so I'd recommend having just a couple of rules that are pretty broad. And then letting students define them and come up with the indicators under that realm. I would, so that's rules and consequences. I would recommend having specific procedures in place for getting in line, you know. How are we going to collect work? How are we going to distribute work? One of the biggest ways in instructional time to me, from what I've seen, is passing out work, you know,
right.
or passing out sheets or getting books. So I would definitely recommend having a system in place where the kids already have the work for them. You know, I personally have bins at all the tables. It's got everything they're going to need in it for the day, divided mm-hmm. up. They know when to get it out. I've probably saved myself 10 minutes in a day not going around and passing things out.
Right.
And when they get ready to turn it in, you're going to put it in that same bin at the bottom. So I'm not going around
picking
collecting. Definitely have something like that in place. But bottom line, whatever procedures you have in place, for it to be effective, you have to expect it delivered with fidelity. And so you got to teach kids right off the bat with those routines and procedures that, you know, not only are you teaching them the routines and procedures, you're teaching them how to do things the right way.
Gotcha.
You know, this is how we do things here. We do things in excellence in all that we do, and I'm going to expect you to be excellent even when you're standing in line. I'm going to expect it to look perfect, because once kids buy into having a perfect line, because that's what you expect, well, that's going to transfer into our reading lesson or into our math lesson. If she expects me to stand perfectly in line, she's going to expect me to be perfectly in class. She's going to expect 100% effort in all that I do. So whatever your management plan is, it needs to be simple enough that you can keep it consistent, that you never undermine what you've already told a kid. That's the most important thing, really. You never want to go back on something you've told a kid. So can you implement it? And can you expect kids to deliver it with excellence every single minute of every single day? I think a lot of times, and this sounds so silly, but I keep going back to getting in line, because I just think about in my school and in the cafeteria, I see so many classes getting in line, and their teachers will say, Now we know, you know, we face forward. Well, you know, you stand in line straight, but then you're seeing them let their kids walk out of the door in a line that is not straight and face forward and quiet.
So
and
it so starts they, with accountability.
And they, and they, well, and you diminish your teacher's credibility right there. If I tell you from day one, this line's going to be quiet, you're going to be facing forward, but then you see that I allow you to just kind of halfway line up, well, then you're just going to halfway deliver anything that I ask of you. And I so the most effective classroom management plan comes down to consistency, holding them accountable for it every day. And that is going to be work on the teacher. You know, there are times it'd be easier for me to sit in the cafeteria and talk to another teacher as my kids are lining up. But if you expect your kids to be excellent, then you have to always be excellent too. So.
I got you. So holding yourself to the same standards that you expect from your students.
Absolutely. I think that's huge. And we all the time, and I'm guilty of it too. You know, we say, don't talk in the hallway. And then we pass the teacher in the hallway and we just have to say something real fast. Well, kids see that. Kids see that you are holding them to a double standard. And so you've got to be transparent with your kids and you've got to be willing to do exactly what you ask them. If you say you're not chewing gum in this class, you're not drinking in this class, that's fine. If that's your rule, you better not be chewing gum and drinking in that class either. I see it all the time. Students can't have drinks in class, but then you've got a teacher up there with their cup and they're like, well, I don't understand this,
right?
You know, and so again, it's kind of eliminating that I'm the adult, you're the child. It's got to be this climate of respect and accountability and transparent consistency all across the board.
Do you find or in your opinion, do you think that some teachers may struggle with that, like, because we put this big onus on being an adult and then you're the child, when you come into a classroom and you have to release some of that power for an effective learning environment, do you find that some teachers may struggle with that?
I think every teacher struggles with that, let's be honest. You know, and it's a struggle for me too, because a lot of, you know, teachers today, we grew up in this era where you are the teacher and I am going to do what you say, just, but you know, and so a lot of us were taught, I know that I was taught, whatever the teacher says, you're not going to question it, you're going to do it, that's just who it is. And if I got in trouble at school, I knew I was going to be in severe trouble at home. It was never going to be questioned. And times are changing and teachers are questioned all the time now, and kids are taught to question their teachers. And so I think to be an effective practitioner in today's climate, it is a struggle, but you have to relinquish some of that because it's not going to work. You're not going to have the respect of the students or of the parents if you just constantly say, well, I'm the teacher and you're going to do it this way with no explanation, because society has shifted from that. And so it's uncomfortable, especially for those of us who grew up seeing it a different way. And it's difficult. It's a challenge. And you're constantly having to practice at it and remind yourself. And you're still going to find yourself slipping up sometimes and just wanting to let a kid have it because he's being so disrespectful. But I think it's necessary to move forward with the way that we are headed in education.
Right. And that's something too. 21st century learning, right? Something, I guess, kind of new when it comes to education, but it's kind of built on that community classroom, a culture building, and it's not lecture-based. It's more project-based, and we are all learning together.
Right at the time that Common Core was passed, and so all of those standards that came with it, and that 21st century teaching came with all of that. And so, I consider myself fortunate enough to be in a classroom right now where all of these things I have seen before. You know, I have not been in a classroom 30 years and now expected to go back and start changing things. Right. I didn't start, you know, I was in school with textbooks and overhead projectors and before we had all these smart boards and things, but I was not a teacher in that time. And so definitely it's easier for me than it is for a teacher who's been in the classroom 30 years. And in 30 more years, things are going to have changed even more. And so I think it's just important, no matter where you are or what your background is, that you are ready to change. You've got to be flexible and you've got to be adaptable if you're going to be effective in the classroom. Because if you can't connect with your students and with the society in which they're growing up, you're not going to be able to connect with them, and therefore you can't teach them anything. And so it's a hard part of teaching. It's a part of teaching I think it's overlooked a lot. People, you just don't think about that. You know, when you decide you want to be a teacher and you're going through these trainings, you don't think about all the changes and the differences in cultures that you're going to encounter and how different society is just from 10 years ago.
Right.
But you've got to be able to adapt to that for sure.
Awesome. I totally believe agree with you with that one. The way we learned in school and just all textbook and projectors and stuff is completely different
from the
way these kids are learning, because now they can Google stuff themselves. So now you have to be even more engaging, because I can do that myself if that's the case.
Exactly. And that's the thing. A lot of their help, we talked about helplessness earlier, they've become very helpless because of technology that we didn't have at our fingertips in school, you know? And so we've got to find a way to cater to how they've grown up and to push them forward with what they have and teach them the value of all of those things. So.
Yeah. Awesome. So in your opinion, do you think there is a secret, like a secret sauce to classroom management?
I 100% believe the secret to classroom management is just creating an environment kids want to be in and then holding them accountable for maintaining that environment. If you, from day one, you treat kids with respect, you make them excited to be there, you show them that, hey, I'm so excited you're here, I'm so glad you're in my classroom. You create an atmosphere where they want to be all of the time, and then you hold them accountable for the classroom management needed to maintain that environment, and it's going to eliminate so many of your issues. The biggest thing for me, as I walk through schools today and you look through windows, and when you see kids checked out, that's where the classroom management comes from. You know, I mean, that's where your classroom management issues stem from, kids who were checked out in the classroom. And so you got to create a classroom where kids want to be, and you've got to hold them accountable for maintaining that environment.
Do you have maybe any advice for that new teacher? She's starting her first day this fall, and classroom management is something that keeps her up at night at this point. She doesn't know what to expect.
I would advise two things. Number one, do not be afraid to ask for help. That's the biggest piece of advice I think I could give. I know as a new teacher, or just as a teacher in general, sometimes we are scared to admit that we don't know everything. Or if you're like I was, you're scared to admit you don't know anything. And you don't want to come off as like you were inequipped for the job, and you don't want people to feel like you don't know what you're doing. But you don't know everything. Nobody knows everything. And so I would encourage her to ask for help. Find a teacher who's rocking classroom management. Find a teacher kids just gravitate towards, and right. Ask her, what are you doing? What can I do? And you know, take that back to your own classroom. Teachers are borrowers. You know, nobody comes up with everything on their own. So find things that are working well for other people and ask them to help you with it, because teachers by nature want to help. And so if you ask a teacher for help, most of them are going to bend over backwards to help you, number one. And then number two, I would just advise her that kids buy into whatever their teacher thinks is important. Every time. And so if you make classroom management a priority from the gate, well, your kids are going to buy into that, and they're going to just go right along with it because you've showed them that it's important. And so don't underestimate the power of classroom management. Don't neglect the time that it's going to take to teach the classroom management. And then find somebody really good at classroom management and just kind of cling on to them for your first couple of months in the classroom.
Awesome. What made you become an educator? Why is teaching so important to you?
I've wanted to be a teacher my whole life. You know, some people say teaching is a calling, and I cannot remember a time in my life I didn't want to be a teacher. And, you know, preschool, first day of school, when you're filling out the interest inventory, you know, when kids were wanting to be prima ballerinas and brain surgeons and Olympic gold medalists, I was dreaming of being a teacher. It's always been my dream. And, you know, my mom tells this story of when I was little, we would go to McDonald's little playpen, and I would just gather up strangers and stick them in the ball pit, and I would teach school to them. You know, like so I just was always teaching. I've never thought about doing anything else. And so I'm literally living my dream. You know, it's the only thing I never even considered anything else. And so I'm living the dream, and it's important to me because I think teachers are what it's going to take to push society where society needs to go. Without teachers, we don't have brain surgeons. Without teachers, we don't have gymnasts. We don't have these Olympic gold medalists, and all these things that kids dream of being as a child would not exist without teachers. And so it means everything to me. One, because I've spent my whole life trying to get right where I am. Literally, at my age, I'm living the dream. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do. But two, I think it's so important as far as shaping the future and where we're going as a society. We've got to have good teachers who care about teaching, who intentionally ended up in the classroom, and make it a plan every single day to help their kids find the greatness that they're going to need to move our country forward. So
awesome. Well, Thank you, Kathy, for coming in, imparting so much knowledge on classroom management. Do you have any last words for our listeners or anything else that you want to share with us?
Just thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Awesome. All right. Well, that wraps up our Teacher Talk Tuesday. Make sure you tune in every Tuesday this summer to listen to what else we have upcoming through Schoolhouse 21. Thank you.